Blog Talk Radio.
This is Mark Grace, and you're listening to Ready to Unload with Cal and Sandpete.
Thursday, March 29th, 2012. This is episode 3.12, 3.Stern, 3.Vakota, 3.Broadway Joe Namath. Any other 12 you want to throw in the mix? I'll let Cal throw a couple in a second. Welcome to the podcast. I'm Steve Sampietro, one of your hosts for the show. And let's bring in my co-host right now, the Cal to my Sampete, the Tony to my Tennille. Wait, no, the captain to my Tennille. I'm going to try to start off the show, Cal, with a reference from at least 30 years ago.
Go ahead.
The Tony Orlando to my Dawn. The Dawn to my Tony Orlando. Yes, that's right. The Ashford to my Simpson. The eight is to your enough. Mr. Brian Calneva, Calpino, Caliente. Hey, Brian.
Hi, Steve.
It's time for that radio show / podcast that we do on a weekly basis.
Sure is.
This is season 3, episode 12. And I want to go back to what we used to do, where we used to do, numbers, or like our favorite numbers in time. So I'm calling this season 3, episode Stearns.
Okay.
Real quick, Cal, who's your favorite Met 12 of all time?
Oh, boy. My favorite Met 12
is... Fire. Rapid fire. Come on.
Well, it's Stearns. It's my favorite.
It's not Robbie Alomar?
It's not Robbie Alomar. It's not Willie Randolph.
Ugh.
What other 12s? There's not many. Darling. Darling was a big number 12.
Darling was 12, but Darling wore... 40,
Darling was
well, what, right?
Started as 44, went to 12, then went to 15.
Then went to 15. I think of Ronnie Darling, I think of 15.
I think of 12. Aguilera, 15.
Aguilera, 15. Aguilera, 38.
38.
86.
Cohn was 15 at one point.
Cohn was 15 and 44 as well.
Right, and 17.
And 17, that's right, after Hernandez left.
That's right. One of the 30 guys, yeah.
All right, so favorite Islander, number 12. Quick, go.
Dakota.
Over Dwayne Sutter.
Over Dwayne Sutter, over Josh Bailey.
The current 12.
He's the current 12, yeah. Dakota, by far.
I'm going to go Dwayne Sutter. It's close, though. I love the Sutter brothers. It was something like that team had that was unique. Like, not only were they like one of the greatest
brothers.
Well, no, but not only were they one of the greatest teams of all time, but they had the Sutter brothers. They had Brett and Dwayne Sutter. Like, who had that?
Yeah, not many people had.
Cool. It was cool. Can't do Jets because that's Namath. No one else has ever worn it.
Only won 12. Well, no. Was there 12 before him?
Yes.
Who?
Yeah. I have no idea. Tim Tebow.
Charlie McGarity?
It was Jimmy McGinticuddy. Now, this brings us into the area where we start making up names that we would use in SNK Baseball Stars. Nintendo.
Oh, boy. Right. Yeah.
Gary McGillicuddy, quarterback. you remember my all-time favorite, Dan and I made up once for a computer hockey game on the Commodore. And it wasn't the 64. It was on, like, a more advanced computer than that. It was a computer hockey game, and we were able to create a player and take him through a number of seasons.
Uh-huh.
Pierre Rougeau. Nice. R-I-J-U-T. And the joke was that it was always mispronounced. Like he pronounced it differently in like every press conference. He was like, Pierre Bouchot.
I love that he came with a story, too.
Yeah. Does anybody have another question for Pierre? Yeah. How do you pronounce your last name? It depends. That was his answer. He was like part Mario Lemieux, part Prince.
Oh. And so he was a mercurial Canadian.
Correct. We have an awesome program tonight, awesome podcast-type program, Cal. We're going to talk a little more about the Tim Tebow debacle. We're going to talk about a little bit about Parcells going to the Saints. That's no punishment, Cal.
Mm.
Our fantasy baseball draft is this Saturday night, and while nobody ever – it's funny, Brian, we're going to have the Mostly Mets Patrick Flood on later to talk about the upcoming Mets season and the upcoming baseball season. Patrick's been on before. He's great. He writes for SNY.TV, the PatrickFloodblog.com. It's just PatrickFloodblog.com. And also is on the Mostly Mets podcast. And I listened to their latest episode. I listen pretty much every week. But their latest episode, they were talking about fantasy baseball because they decided to do a fantasy baseball league.
Mm-hmm.
And they said it. Nobody wants to hear about your fantasy baseball team. It's the old Bill Simmons adage, and he's right. Nobody cares. And yet somehow we sneak it in.
We always sneak it in.
Well, we're
not going to talk about our teams.
No, we're going to talk about the draft itself.
Right.
And what the fantasy sports draft has become. I mean, 40-year-old virgin took it on with Paul Rudd and stuff like that, and about him, you know, his wife thought he was having an affair, and he was really going out to a fantasy baseball draft.
Didn't he get made fun of for drafting Carlos Delgado too?
Was it Delgado? It had to be a Met. Because that's just
It was Delgado, but
yeah,
or maybe he was angry that someone else got Delgado for
yeah, maybe that was it. I just remember him promoting that movie and being on. Maybe it was Conan.
Who yeah. Rudd or Carell?
No, Rudd being on Conan and then being or I mean, no, it was the Daily Show. Maybe it was the Daily Show. I don't know, but he was talking about how into fantasy baseball he is.
Mm-hmm.
And like he's like I somehow know who you know and it was who was the real fast kid for the Reds Cal. They could find a position for him. We all danced with him at one time or another.
Ryan Friel.
Right, we all picked him up at one time or another. And
oh yeah,
and Rudd is on Conan saying there's no reason I should know who Ryan Friel is, and yet I do, and I'm upset. That he's not the starting left fielder. Anyway, we're going to talk about our draft later, but we have Patrick coming up. But we have a ton to talk about with the Saints and the Parcells thing. Before we get to all that, let's bring in the guy who's going to produce the show. I love bringing people in. Have you noticed that?
Is he going to produce the show? Because he should have started already.
About 8 minutes ago.
I have a plan I do not have yet.
I think there's your answer, Brian.
Oh, boy.
I think somebody's already producing the hell out of this show. Well done.
That was my big move.
That's it? That's all you got?
That's it. Good evening. Good night.
That's it. Ladies and gentlemen, let's do this appropriately. Let's do this appropriately. Here it is.
Oh.
The sweet, soothing sounds.
It's like someone pouring warm gravy over me.
Which has happened, by the way. That's a true story.
True story?
No, that's a true story. Okay. That brings up a great question. Before we get to the Jets and Tebow and all this ridiculous. Brings up a great question. That only my best friend Cal and Pop Culture PJ could answer.
So last night I'm watching
live on the show.
So last night I'm watching America's Next Top Model,
right?
With the wife, not by myself, like DVRing it with a cup of popcorn and a Chardonnay.
I'm with Teresa watching America's Next Top Model, which I like to make fun of. Let's be honest. And I have for
sure
several I've done it for several cycles, and I know that they're called cycles and not seasons. How's that?
Wait, you watch it just to make fun of it?
That's correct.
Really?
You know how I knew that show was comedy gold? The first time I ever watched it with someone just to make fun of it, they had to subtitle the models, and they were American.
Yikes.
I was like, this is too easy.
For grammatical reasons? Or
that's correct. That's correct.
They buttered or what?
No, for grammatical reasons. They needed to actually
subtitle. What she really had to say in an English-speaking country was this.
That's correct. So anyway, we're watching that yesterday. It's the Brits versus the Americans. That's the conceit here for Cycle 17.
That old chestnut.
And that's right. They dusted that one off. And
Star Wars did it.
And they had to – their photo shoot – they were in Toronto. So their photo shoot was with Maple Leafs covering them. And literally someone pouring maple syrup on them. And they had to take the picture.
Wow.
Right. So Teresa looks at me and I'm like, well, really? I mean, with the maple syrup, really? Like, really? And she's looking at me like, now I know why you watch this show. I'm like, I'm no dummy. Because I'm not a leerer, guys. You know that. I'm not a leerer. So if I need to sneak it in. So I'm looking at...
caught staring? Is that what you're saying?
I don't. I'm not a starer. I'm not. I'm like I get all goosey. I blush. I blush very easy. I'm a fruit. Do you stammer?
Get out of the public library for doing that.
I do stammer. I do. Just got kicked out of a public library. Wait, are you looking at the librarian and having that moment?
Sir, please take your book and go.
Sir, I will not be doing the naughty librarian fantasy for you, sir. Okay, and I know that's what you're thinking, sir. But just because I have glasses does not mean I'm a naughty librarian.
P.S. You're already doing it. Is what I said.
Right.
And that's when they kicked me out.
So they had to do a photo shoot by getting maple syrup poured on them. And you just said pouring gravy on you. If you had to pick... if you were doing a photo shoot, what are they pouring on you? My answer is obvious. It's completely making this non-sexual. My answer is obvious. It's beer. Like, really good beer. And I want to be bathed in beer. How's that?
We're getting something symbolic here for you, in other words. In other words, it's only fitting. It should be beer.
Well, I just thought when you said gravy, it was so appropriate.
Well, I'm a gravy guy.
For him? Yes, because he loves gravy. Gravy or sauce?
It would be Italian gravy. It would be red sauce with meatballs falling
meat.
All over me.
Right.
Gravy meat with brajol and sausage
pork,
and meatballs.
A couple of pork necks.
Now this has gotten filthy. Okay.
There's a sweet sausage stuck in my armpit. I'm trying not to notice. You can visualize.
Yeah. Wow.
Unfortunately, I can.
Yeah, and I will not be able to not visualize that. You mean like over and over again? Well, no. We shouldn't be made to smell the glove over and over again.
Not over and over again. No.
Peach, before we let you go and we start talking about Tim Tebow so you can go take a nap, the Fred Willard on WTF, by the way. We're going to talk to Patrick about probably Michael Cera a little bit later because Michael Cera was on WTF and he talked about the Arrested Development movie. Peach, Fred Willard.
Yeah.
I don't know how many different ways or times I can tell you you need to listen to the WTF with Marc Maron podcast. But I have
several of them. I'm very backlogged. I don't think I've gotten past the Chris Rock, and that was like 10 weeks ago.
That was like 10 months ago.
10 months ago is what I meant.
Cal, yeah. the Fred Willard one, astounding. Mm-hmm. Because he is that guy. I mean, he's doing a character and he's brilliant in all the Christopher Guest stuff.
But you believe that's who he is.
Oh my goodness, he just starts talking and you're like he does that thing with and all sorts of fun stuff like that. We were having a good time. It didn't make it, you know. And he's from Cleveland, and he's got this sort of Midwestern genuine quality.
Uh-huh.
He's one of our great treasures, actually.
He really...
underrated. So, like, underrated, overrated, rated. So underrated.
Tremendously underrated.
Tremendously underrated.
I mean, go listen to this podcast. I urge you. Because it's just a nice hour and 20 minutes with Fred Willard. It's about an hour.
Well,
nice
since,
hour
since you bring
Fred
it up, Willard. Since you do bring up the man, you heard about the Anchorman sequel just been announced?
Yes. Yes.
In the works. It's coming. Yep. Coming. So let's hope they bring Willard back for that.
well,
it sounds like everybody's coming back, so.
Play it off as a prank. It's a... He's in the clock tower. Play it off. It's okay. Just calm down. Put the gun down. Surrender. We'll play it off as a prank. She's so good. It's just there's a. You know, it's funny to see Fred Willard and Will Ferrell in a movie together because there's a level of commitment that's there.
Mm.
That's so genuine. And of course, Fred Willard is always against type. Too often. I mean, he's sort of the straight guy who's he's just a brilliant straight guy. He's got brilliant comedic timing, but he's against type, whereas Ferrell is just so committed to whatever he's doing. But to see the two of them in a movie together, it's just so good. It's just so good. Oh. He talks a lot about Fernwood tonight, Peach.
Oh, with Martin Mull.
Martin Mull? Cal, I didn't know.
Yeah, big fan.
Really?
Yep.
We talked about this, San Pete.
You talked about Ferdwin tonight on the show?
Yeah, we've...
Well, we have. I don't think we have.
Was that a different show I called into?
That might have been...
That might have been before you were on staff.
Yeah, well, you know, I am in demand.
Big... I don't know if we did, I apologize. Let's talk about it again. Sorry, I was doing
Ooh, that was Fred, good.
Fred, little Fred Willard there. Instant impression.
That was good. Instant impression.
Big baseball fan, by the way, Cal. Big sports fan, played baseball.
Must be an Indians fan.
Big tribe fan. Anyway, go check it out, Peach. And you, Cal. And you. You're not off the hook.
Should I leave? Should I leave the show now and just go do that?
Just go listen to it now.
Yeah, come back in an hour and a half with your report on the show.
Give us a brief pressy.
Okay. Can I give you a very quick nerd alert?
Always.
I'm just very excited. I'm a little giddy about it.
Do we need like a little music or something? You want a little something?
It's not. It's not that momentous. But.
he just revealed the alert, but nobody heard it.
What do you got there?
Now back to
nerd
you,
alert.
Steve.
More on this story later. Back to you, Steve.
More on what could be killing you. Back to you, Steve.
What story? What was he talking about?
Stupid panda jerk. What do you got? Nerd alert.
I tripled the RAM in my laptop. And it's wonderful.
You just crashed the internet, my friend.
That's not a euphemism either, is it?
Oh, I have so many windows open, let me tell you.
Twitter just blew up, my friend. You just blew up Twitter. Forget Tebow.
You know the craziest thing about it? Was that it was $40 to put 8 gigs of RAM into my computer.
You know, when I say things on the little promos for the show on Facebook about how you're going to tell everybody how you can turn their dishwasher into a space station.
Right.
I'm joking.
No. Come on.
That's no moon. That's a space station.
That wasn't too geek time for you. I'm just saying it's a really cheap, good, do-it-yourself instant gratification little computer mod that anybody could do.
That's actually that is pretty cool because I need to upgrade the RAM on both my netbook and my laptop.
Well, do it, my friend.
Yeah,
do it.
I've just I also did Dan Aykroyd there as Obi-Wan Kenobi.
By the way, you guys just totally missed that.
I think that was only happening in your head.
Yeah, I missed it.
That's no moon.
That's a space station.
It's the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man.
It's the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man.
What did you do, Ray? Hey, quick guess, Fred Willard, how old is he?
71.
Ooh.
I say
PJ?
72.
He's 72. Remarkable. And you know what? I don't know if that was said during the podcast.
It might have been. If it was, I missed it, so I just took a guess there.
Yeah, I just looked it up, and I was shocked. Wouldn't have thought that. I mean, he's been around forever, but I still wouldn't have thought that.
I feel shocked.
Well, he stays in terrific shape because he's on an all-tomato diet.
He does still does a lot of sketch. Once a month, he has a group with his wife, and they do sketch, and just really great. Really great. I feel shocked, Cotton.
Stunned.
yeah, shocked and stunned.
Mm.
If you haven't seen The Ruddles, go watch The Ruddles, too, while you're at it. Now, I bet you Cal's never seen The Ruddles.
I've seen The Ruddles. There's a lot you don't know.
I guess next you're going to talk about that on the show.
You're trying to categorize Cal as this sort of wallflower, doesn't leave the house, you know, doesn't put on certain channels of the television, would never have seen this kind of guy. I think he's been around.
I'm not just Mets.
No. No.
Anymore.
Mets and Monty Python. He's well rounded.
Listen.
Apparently.
Oh, I
know.
I do have a little
cult. You do have a little cult of what?
I have a little culture in me.
You have a ton of culture. It's right in your wheelhouse. That's why I said I did sort of say, I bet you've never seen it. I apologize. I shouldn't.
It's subtle and hidden, but it's on call whenever I need it.
You know what's wonderful about it, Cal? It's that you're not me, and you beat everybody over the head with it by quoting from it endlessly.
Well, look.
Lord have mercy.
I just sit back and let it happen.
All right. You don't beat everybody about the head, quoting from it. Or as PJ likes to like once said about me, Steve's a lot of fun unless you've already seen that movie.
Go on. What's the rest of it?
He makes a great white noise machine.
Also makes an excellent white noise machine.
That's correct. That's
I actually tried to name the band that at one point.
White noise machine, yes.
He was not amused.
Yeah. But also, neither was the NAACP, which was the other problem with that name.
Oh, stop it.
Oh, we could have gotten away with it. All right, Pete, we're going to go talk about Tebow. Enough now. Because we've been arguing about Tebow all day again.
Did you hear he's getting uniform number 316?
Look what Tebow's doing to our family. Look what he's doing to us. I think we need to do like a very emotional public service announcement for Jet fans. I want to go all James Dean and Rebel Without a Cause on it. You're tearing me apart!
I don't buy it. I think it's all going to be fine.
One of you says Wildcat. One of you says 20 snaps. You're tearing me apart! Sorry. That was a James Dean and Rebel Without a Clause. Cause.
Rebel Without a Clause.
Rebel Without a Clause.
That was a little more Franco than Dean, though. You kind of went meta with it.
I did go meta. I did go
a little meta with it.
A little Franco on TNT there? Is that what I did?
A little Franco doing Dean. Like last week, you did a little Spacey doing Mathal. You know? I like the way you do that. It's got layers.
Wasn't Rebel Without a Clause the Steve Guttenberg holiday movie on ABC Family? It was, right?
What, did he work in a motorcycle shop or something?
He did.
Rebel Without a Clause. Aw, oh, Dad, you're always working. Are you going to make it to my concert?
Gee, Jimmy, I'll try.
Not this Christmas.
These motorcycles don't fix themselves. And then, of course, he rides in on the motorcycle as Santa Claus.
Correct.
at the key moment of the Christmas pageant.
Can we cast the wife or ex-wife, as it probably was in this one? They're separated.
Shelley Long.
Too easy. I want to challenge you a bit here.
Bonnie Bedelia. She brings the darkness with it.
But Ally Sheedy.
Ooh.
Very good.
I like it. Stunt casting. Very well done.
Sexy Christmas.
Sexy Claus. Okay. Yes. To the point at hand, that Tim Tebow is tearing friendships asunder. Okay, so what were we accused of? Well, I want to talk about the Brickishaw Ferguson's comments. All right, but before we do that, I want to talk about Darrell Revis's comments. But
before all of that, I've got breaking news. I said, I've got breaking news.
Oh, I'm sorry. I apologize. Excuse me. That's okay.
I've got breaking news. This just in to the RTU sports desk.
Oh, goodness.
Tim Tebow.
No boy.
Has established his presence on Twitter. He's finally weighed in.
Wait a
second. On his trade to the Jets on Twitter.
Wait a second. This is. We may need different music. This is huge. Tim Tebow is on Twitter?
Yes. He's always been on Twitter, but he has now tweeted 4 times today about his trade to the Jets.
Go ahead.
Are you ready for this?
I'm psyched. Apparently.
All right, ready? Tim Tebow.
That sounds like the devil's music.
Yeah, this is... Tim Tebow on Twitter. I've already said it 44 times, so here goes number 45. I'm really excited to be a Jet. Ha ha. All joking aside, it's truly an honor to be a Jet, and I'm anxiously looking forward to going to work with all of my new teammates and coaches. Fireman Ed and the rest of Jets Nation, I'm going to play my heart out for you. J-E-T-S. Jets, Jets, Jets. End tweet.
Did you just Tebow as you finished reading that tweet?
Oh, I did the end scene.
All right.
I'm not an actor. It's uncomfortable.
I don't know if I want to spend the next 30 minutes breaking down his tweet.
No, we're not going to, but I felt it was very important.
No, that's honestly, Brian, that's huge. Look, so much since last week when we were on, it was the day of the trade. I, of course, hated it at first. I've been accused of backtracking. I don't think I've backtracked. I think I still hate the trade. I still think it was made. Let me run this scenario by you, Bri. This is what I'm going with right now. And I think I sort of said it last week. But I was talking to Rich, our buddy Rich, the other day. I was talking to Dan, our buddy Dan, who hates this trade. I mean, every Jet fan except Dr. Erastat hates this trade. Right?
I don't hate it.
And of course, I don't hate it anymore.
Yeah, I've come around a little bit.
I mean, I hate that they made it. But they made it.
So I don't hate that they made it. I wish they hadn't.
Okay, but just let me answer me this. Tell me
I
if
wish
this
they
sounds
would have called me first, that's all.
Yeah, and so does Mark Sanchez. Tell me if this is plausible. Okay, both of you guys. This is for you too, PJ. But tell me if this is plausible. This is how I think it went down. I think Woody Johnson caught wind of the fact that Tim Tebow is going to be made available, and I think Woody Johnson at that point goes to Mike Tannenbaum and says, I want him. Go get him. At that point, Mike Tannenbaum goes to Rex Ryan and Tony Sperano, his football guys, and says, look, here's the deal. And this may all happen in 20 minutes. Here's the deal. Just talk to Woody. He wants Tebow. Tebow's available. Can you use him? What do you think? If you are vehemently against this, I will tell him no.
I will tell him the same thing I told him about going to get Peyton Manning. Okay, that we if we pursue it to a certain degree and it doesn't happen, we're going to look bad, so let's not do it. And Ryan and Sperano said, which is a version of what Tannenbaum said, by the way. Like, this part Tannenbaum said, I was sitting between Rex Ryan and Tony Sperano, who had both been beaten by him, beaten by Tim Tebow's Broncos during the season, and I said, what do you guys think? And Rex said, you know what, we could use him. And he's the biggest show in town, why not? And Sperano, most importantly, said, well, I tell you what, I was looking for somebody to run the Wildcat. He's a heck of a lot better than Jeremy Curley. Yes, go ahead with it. So the brainchild or the inception is Woody Johnson. The reason he's a Jet is Woody Johnson. But the football guys have to sign off on it. They had to have. And what's getting overlooked here is, or made fun of, depending if you're Mike Francesa, is that the fact that they're not the same offense as they were last year. They fired their offensive coordinator, and they brought in a guy who runs the Wildcat as part of his base offensive package. So you can sort of see the machinations for football. Does that sound plausible to you?
I think all of that sounds plausible, except for the fact where you suggested that Tannenbaum said, if this is not going to work, I'll go back to Woody and tell him it's not going to work. I don't believe that. I think Tannenbaum was on board with this along with Woody.
You think there was no choice?
There was no choice. And I think he knows he had no choice.
All right. I think I disagree there, because I think Tannenbaum in the past has been able to keep Woody Johnson at bay for some other things. I think if Rex and Sperano had said to him, no way, absolutely not, and Tannenbaum went back to Woody and said, look, I talked to the guys. This is not a good idea. Okay? This is not a good idea. Now, whether they should have or not is a different story. But they didn't. I really do think that's the way down. And you know what? It's done. What's done is done. I'm a Jet fan. I root for the Jets. I'm not going to boo Tebow. I think the criticism now has jumped the shark.
Mm-hmm.
I really do. I really think the criticism of this move has completely jumped the shark to the point. Rex Ryan says, we may use it 20 times in a game, we may use it 2. What does the media take out of that? They're going to use it 20 times. That's a third of your plays. It's a quarterback platoon. Can we wait? Can we wait till one OT, please? OTA, can we wait? I mean, come on. Come on. Rex Ryan needs to win this year. Cal, if they go 8-8 again, guess what? Turn out the lights. The party's over. His job is in jeopardy. Okay, if you think for a second that he and Tony Sperano think that Tim Tebow is a better every-down quarterback than Mark Sanchez, you're out of your mind. You're out of your mind.
If the Jets go 8-8, okay, the circus will be leaving town.
Speaking of the service, we have Patrick Flood coming up in a minute. Patrick is joining the program for a number of times. He's holding on. Just hold on a couple of seconds, Patrick. We got a little bit of a late start. I hope you can hold. And we're going to talk about the Mets and get off this Tebow crap. But I do want to say this, Bri. Darrell Revis and DeBrickashaw Ferguson not helping.
No.
Can the Jets shut up? Can they shut up?
No.
I mean, Darrell Revis, can he just say, you know what, I don't know what's going to happen. We'll see. Good football player. That's all. I mean, is it that hard? And I will say the one thing, well, you were talking about DeBrick's comments. What did DeBrick say?
I'm sure Jets training camp will be buzzing and there will be a lot of cameras around. It can be a distraction, but at the same rate, it can be positive for us as well. We've just got to figure out how best to navigate all those things. So his comments were not that bad. But, of course, they lead with the Tebow edition will bring a circus atmosphere.
Right.
And then of course, they don't follow the lead. That's what they lead with. And then buried in the story is the fact that the comments are not that bad.
Right. And the other thing that he said, which was great, I thought, was about he alluded to the idea that it's perception.
Who, you Ferguson?
Know, yeah, about if the Patriots – he didn't say this, but he sort of alluded to this idea. Like the Patriots are always doing something crazy personnel-wise like this. And then it works out, and you're like, why did the Patriots do that in the offseason? And then you're like, oh, I see. Like, that's what DeBrick said. He's like, when the season plays out, you're like, oh, that's why.
Right.
And that I had tweeted with Rod Boone, the beat guy for Newsday for the Jets. Newsday? He's Newsday still, right?
Yes.
He's very good, by the way, Cal. I need to read him more. I think he's very fair. Is that me?
I don't follow him, so.
Okay. Well, I stopped following Manesh Mehta from the Daily News, who covered
Yeah, this is that was this week's
Right. My first ever unfollow. And it was ceremonious. I got in a couple of punches before I left. I love that Dr. Erase that our buddy Evan thinks that I'm like biting a pillow and just so furious when I'm
because that is the impression.
Right. I'm so not.
I know.
He's like, why are you engaging these guys on Twitter? I'm like, I'm throwing it out to the atmosphere. It's like when you read the paper and the article annoys you and you're like, I wish I could say this. Well, I can. It doesn't mean they're reading it.
Well, he's gone. We've unfollowed him.
Yes, but anyway, I tweeted to Rod Boone saying, it's all about perception. If the Patriots make this move for Tim Tebow, they're throwing bouquets at Bill Belichick's feet. There he goes again. Look out, NFL. He'll know how to use. And if Belichick came out and said, and you know what, we may use it 10, 15 times a game, which, by the way, is not crazy. They had Josh McDaniel, and I've read in several places, including from Schefter, that they were interested in Tebow.
Well.
But no, the Jets do it, and it's crazy pants.
Well, it's perception. I mean, and everything is perception. It's like if Jabba Chamberlain was a Met, what he did would have been irresponsible and only
about it.
You know, and only the Mets.
Could you imagine?
Whereas now it's well, the only thing he's guilty of is being a good father.
Yeah,
and we feel so bad for him.
That would have broken the only the Mets meter.
Oh my, yeah.
Like that would have buried the needle.
Right.
Months. Two last things, and then we're gonna bring in our buddy Patrick. On Tebow. Revis and the whole calling Bill Belichick a jerk thing.
Mm-hmm.
Is did you see the interview, Bryce?
No, I just heard the comments. I read the comments.
It was a dopey word association game
mm-hmm.
that he and Rob Gronkowski were playing on ESPN in like a 60-second word association thing or whatever because they were promoting Madden.
Right.
For the cover of the new Madden. Which everybody was so funny tweeting, Darrell Revis, don't worry about a curse. He's already on the Jets.
Funny?
This stuff writes itself.
You can't make it up, folks.
You could.
Well, you could.
You'd be an idiot. But anyway, they were like, it was first thing that comes to your head. Go. Bill Belichick. And he goes, jerk. And Gronkowski was like, I did not see that coming.
Can he say that?
And it's like, you care to elaborate on that? He's like, well, just, you know, some of the comments, some of the things he said about the Jets, sort of a jerk. And that was it. I mean, it wasn't,
yep.
You know, he didn't go out of his way to call him a jerk. It was, I mean, come on. And Gronkowski got the best shot in of anybody. Because they asked him about his one word was Tim Tebow. Did you see what he said?
I don't remember. What was it?
Starting quarterback of the New York Jets.
That
was the first thing that came to zing.
Mark Sanchez was watching that and did a spit take when he heard that.
Right. Mark Sanchez went Jack Tripper on that one. Did he just say that? What do you mean Chrissy's pregnant? Oh my goodness. So anyway, much ado about nothing. Lastly, you know, we got into it again in the RTU chat room with the guys. And something we didn't talk about last week, and I want to just touch on, and Patrick, we'll get to you in just a second. The football aspect, Brian. I sent you a really good article from Grantland by their football writer there, who's a real X's and O's guy, about how and why this absolutely could work from a football standpoint. And I got to be honest with you, I started to think about some of the I take this as a given, Ty. There's no chance that they think he's a better starting quarterback than Mark Sanchez. None. Okay? So that's one given going into this. They're not bringing him in here to start or compete for the starting job. They're not. Those are givens to me. And no matter how badly the media wants it, no matter how many private planes he has or loyal fans he has, those do not equal starter. It's going to be what happens on the football field. And New York is not Denver. Okay. The minute Tim Tebow does come in and fumbles a snap, okay, they're going to be calling for Mark Sanchez. All right, this is not Denver. Okay? Tim Tebow fans are not going to be able to buy tickets. Okay, so they may call for Tim Tebow all they want when Mark Sanchez is not playing well. The minute Tebow screws up, which he will because he's not an NFL quarterback, they'll want Mark Sanchez back. That's the way New York is. It's not Denver. Okay, but anyway, taking all that aside, from a football aspect, with the offensive coordinator that they now have, they added a very good weapon. Think about this, Bri. Think about that Denver game. Think about how well the defense played that whole game, 72 hours after playing a game on Sunday night and getting beaten up by the Patriots, and then getting on a plane and going to Denver to play in the Mile High City. All right? And the offense could not get a first down. They had, what, six three and outs in a row. It was like a punt festival. It was the run, punt, and pass contest. And if you get four three and outs in that game, and you could roll Tebow and the Wildcat out there for a series just to pick up a couple of first downs and change things up. They don't even have to score. And give the defense a 3 or 4 minute breather. Okay, and then run Sanchez back out there. You're already ahead of the game. You haven't turned the ball over and you've shifted the momentum. I think it can absolutely work, and I think there's going to be games where they only use it 2 or 3 times and games where they may need it 20 times. You play the Patriots twice a year. You play the Dolphins twice a year. You play the Bills twice a year. All those teams in your division, those are tough games. You play the Raiders every year for some inexplicable reason. I mean, that second game is difficult to win. You have to change things up. Why do you think the Giants lose to the Eagles once a year? Whether they stink or not, why do the Giants lose to the Redskins once a year? I'm telling you, it can work. From a football aspect, it can work, Bri. Now, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say I agree, but let's give it a chance to work. You know, let's not, and I keep using this phrase, and I just changed the date for whatever day we're on, but on March 28th, how can we say that it's going to be a failure? It's going to be a success or it's going to be a failure? You have no way of saying that right now. You can't make a definitive statement on what's going to happen today.
And you also can't make a definitive statement on what it's even going to be. To say that because Rex Ryan on March 27th said they may use it 20 times in a game, that it's going to be a quarterback platoon is idiotic.
We don't know what it's going to be.
You don't know. They don't know.
Right. Exactly.
They have no concept of the instrument. They were blowing into it. All right. We've done it. That's it. A week later, I'm not going to lie to you. I feel like a Yankee fan when they got Clemens. I hate it. I still hate it. But you know what? I'm going to find a way to make it work. And now I'm just like you, Bri. You said it perfectly. When you said, now I want it to work, so all the media can eat a big, huge crap burger.
Yep.
Now I want, and which brings us to the Mets. That's a perfect segue. Brings us right to the Mets.
All right.
racked my brain about what Flood's intro music would be. Well, we've used this before for him.
We have, right?
Yeah. That's right. The last time he was on, I think we used this. And I think he appreciated it. Well, and also, I want to just say, now, there will be Flood. See what I did there?
I see.
Didn't do that the first time.
Club wordplay, I like it.
Let's welcome back to Ready to Unload, our buddy from SNY.TV and the Mets blog there, patrickfloodblog.com, and also from the Mostly Mets podcast, which is on iTunes with Toby Hyde and Ted Berg, which is really taken off. And it's if you're a Mets fan, it's a weekly must-listen. Boy, that was really radio-y. I apologize. That was really radio-y. Hey, Patrick.
Hey.
What's going on, man? Long time no talk. The baseball season's upon us. I just did a ridiculously radio intro for you.
Yeah, that's okay. The Jets traded for Tim Tebow.
No, I don't know if you've heard.
No, I didn't. It's been very underreported. That's really flown under the radar. That's interesting.
It's one of those subtle little moves that championship teams make.
It is, yeah. It's the little ones during the offseason that really build a championship team.
Only those that study the transaction pages in the sports section would have known about that one.
Mm-hmm.
That brings me to my first question before we get to all the other Mets stuff and 2012 and everything. We have a ton to talk to you about. Thanks for joining us again. And but do you have a – give me a comparison. Who is there one? If the Mets traded for blank, this would be happening. I don't think there is.
Oh, it'd be like if the Mets traded for I don't even know. Like a not very good third baseman who couldn't throw the ball to first base. And they were like, no, David Wright's definitely our third baseman. Nothing's going to happen to David Wright. But they got this guy anyway.
Right.
But he'd have to be insanely popular too.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know
if there is a baseball equivalent, but it would be something like that.
He'd have to be inexplicably the most popular player in football.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he'd also have to be religiously and politically polarizing, too. If we could do that. How come no baseball players are that way?
No baseball players are that dividing?
Yeah, how come we don't have a baseball Tebow?
I don't know. I don't think you get that many. There's kind of a lull right now in terms of baseball players, of like their personalities and stuff. Like the very best players right now tend not to be very interesting. Like Albert Bullock.
Good point.
Not interesting. Yeah. I think Bryce Harper would be the one that you can hope becomes good.
Ooh.
It would also be interesting.
He could be the one player to unite us all. He could be that guy.
Right, we're just like an awesome villain who at least has some kind of personality.
Right, you guys talk about. You guys said that on the podcast, and that was on today's, and that was, or the one that dropped today. Can we say dropped for a podcast?
Yeah, you can say
drop. Yeah. You guys dropped that like it was hot today, by the way. Very, very hot track. But you guys cast Bryce Harper as like a future villain, and I sort of love that.
Yeah, I think he'd be really good for that, because he kind of already is, you know? Just needs to, as long as he's good, I think he'll be a very good villain for a long time.
Well, Patrick, would he be the replacement to Chipper Jones, since Chipper Jones is retiring now?
I don't want to put that on anyone, because Chipper Jones has been such a good villain for such a long time. I'm going to be sad when he goes, because he's been so good. Like, kind of just, like, so evil the whole time, and kind of in on it, that he's impossible to replace.
But does he earn your respect on his way out now? Like, after all these years of hating him, finally you have to admit that you respect him at the end?
I think he'll get a big standing ovation whenever, the Braves are in town in September and it seems like it's going to be his last time playing the Mets at home. I think. Mm-hmm. I think, right? I mean, would you applaud him? Like, just give him a nice round of, like, goodbye, hope to never see you again, but it's been fun.
I feel like Cal and I differ on this, though, because we talked about this a couple weeks ago, Cal, and I said Chipper I sort of love now. Like, Chipper is that evil villain that I've sort of come to love as in my old age, because he really – he still hurts us. I mean, he still had, like, big hits against us last year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not us. I don't play. But still big hits against the Mets and stuff like that. But he's the lovable villain.
Yeah, he's, you know, he's kind of like, he seems to be in on it. Like, he understands the jokes.
He plays up to it sometimes.
Yeah. He embraced it.
I tell you, we haven't had a guy like that since Rocker. Right?
Yeah, no, there really hasn't been any kind of like really evil villain kind of people to show up. I mean, well, just the whole Phillies team, really, but not in like a...
Jeff needs one, right?
Not like an actual bad guy.
And Oliver Perez.
Yeah, and Oliver Perez.
he was our homegrown villain, though. Like, he was our own villain.
Right.
Yeah, he wasn't the villain
to
anybody else.
Yeah, and guys like that, like, you know, Oliver Perez and...
Louis Castillo, sure.
Yeah.
This is our 12th episode of the third season, and we did our favorite Met 12s for this episode. Who's your favorite Met 12 of all time?
Met 12?
Yeah, who wore number 12 that you love? It's Robbie Alomar, isn't it?
Gosh, that's a tough one. But it's Scott Hairston right now, right? Scott Hairston is number 12 right now.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Who else has worn number 12 of the Mets?
We're a little 100 years older than you, so our favorite 12 is John Stearns.
Okay, yes, he's before me, and I don't know. I'm running low here.
Darling,
it's like,
Darling wore it for a little while.
Okay.
Ronnie wore it before 15. After 15?
He wore it after 15.
After 15.
Frank Hoare.
Jeff
Francoeur. I think I'll go with him. Let's go with Jeff Francoeur. Jeff Francoeur is definitely my favorite number 12.
The guy who proved sabermetrics is not just a theory. Yes, Jeff Francoeur.
Jeff,
Jeff Kent also wore number 12.
That's right. Jeff Kent. Wow. When we had him, when he wasn't good. So a number of things I want to get to, Patrick. It's been a really interesting offseason. A lot of stuff you've talked about on the Mostly Mets podcast, so I don't want to sort of overlap. But one thing that was extremely intriguing, and I got to be honest with you, Patrick, sort of exciting for me to read recently on your blog, was you talking about having press credentials and a press pass.
Yes.
And, like, we talked to you, like, 2 years ago on this show when you were just sort of writing your blog and we were touting how good your blog was and how good your writing was, and it remains so. But it was like reading that was like, oh, he's all, wow, look at how far – this is amazing. Like, this is really cool that you and of course, Ted and stuff, but you have come this far. To be, you were on the field, like watching BP and like hanging out, and so tell us a little bit, because Brian and I are insanely jealous, but not in like a bad way. But tell us a little bit about that.
What I wrote about is there's a lot of just standing around in different places. There is an enormous amount of standing around, and just kind of watching things happen, like just kind of being like this floating eyeball. That you get to, like, see things, but you kind of just stand there and don't really interact with any of them.
Sounds like it's like being in a room with a tiger.
It's sort of kind of like being at the zoo, almost, but, like, there's no cage. Like, there's nothing in between you, you know, like... It's kind of like that. I mean, it's very cool. It's very cool. But at the same time, there are long stretches where you're just like, okay, so I just stand here now for a very long time waiting for somebody to talk to all the reporters, and then I'll just listen in because that might be interesting.
Right. Now, you talked about something on today's Mostly Mets that I thought was really funny about. Was it Frank Francisco talking about Ike Davis?
Yes. Yeah. Well, that's the other thing. Is like sometimes you just wander around, you overhear bits of conversation and things like that. And yeah, it was Frank Francisco who didn't know who Ike Davis was, I think. But I'll give him a break because he's a pitcher and like he's doing pitcher stuff all day. And it's not like they're really interacting with anybody else. But, he was watching, like, David take batting practice and asked Danny Murphy, like, who that was. And then was kind of horrified at the humongous leg kick that Ike Davis has. Like, you know, that's really his swing. And then that's the kind of stuff you see.
Right. I love two things about that story. One, that he doesn't know who Ike Davis is.
Yep.
But two, that he's boys with Daniel Murphy. Like, Daniel Murphy, he knows.
I'm not sure if he knew Daniel Murphy's name. knew he was a teammate and he knew he was somebody he could ask about. But I'm not. If I had to know whether or not he knew the name, I would have.
Well, he's still learning them. It's like, you know, it's like orientation for him.
Yeah, he's new. You know, you give him a couple of weeks in the regular season to figure out who everyone is.
I went through 4 years of college with people I met at orientation. I still didn't know their names.
Well, one of the other things that I was interested to hear was you, you know, sort of have come at the Mets and at it from a fan perspective, but also a fan who's extremely analytical and stuff like that. Were you able to sort of put that into play while you were watching drills or you were watching, you know, I mean, when they're doing a rundown drill or they're doing piggyback cutoffs from the outfield or something like that? Were you able to sort of meld those two things together? Like you're extremely sort of analytical. And I know you're not a huge sabermetrician, but I know you do like those numbers and stuff. Were you able to sort of meld that and see how they fit together? Do you know what I mean? Like the way the game is practiced and the way the game is played.
I mean, the thing that impressed me most about spring training practice, things like that, not necessarily anything to do with numbers, because I don't think – I think that's something the front office thinks about when they're putting the team together. And then once kind of you get the coaches out there, the coaches do their own thing. Except for Dave Hudgens, who I think at least has kind of bases his philosophy on what actually works based on facts and things like that. And then tries to implement that. I heard things about him showing minor leaguers, like, you know, the heat maps, like, you know, where are good places to swing at pitches based on, like, you know, people actually graphing out all the pitches and where they go and what's a good strike to swing and that kind of stuff. But in terms of what actually impressed me the most about watching everyone practice is thinking about, like, I don't know if you guys watch, I think I've talked about this on the Mets podcast too. If you watch, like, NBA basketball this year, like, how bad a lot of the shooting percentages are, and you get those, like, just, like, horrific possessions, and you get a couple of them in a row back and forth. It looks really bad, and it almost just stresses how important practice is, even to professional athletes. They actually do need to work on this stuff for, if you're a Major League Baseball player, for, like, the 6-8 weeks before the season. As silly as after drills look and how you're like, do they really need to practice this still? I think they actually do because you know, playing professional baseball is hard.
Yeah, no, they really do. I mean, I know, you know, we've talked about it before on the show, but I obviously didn't play Major League Baseball, professional baseball, but I played in college and you know, Cal played baseball. We you know, we both played for a really long time. And I remember, you know, you're going through the fall season, and I loved practice. I mean, that's something some of my friends and I that played ball in college and stuff like that, we loved practice. Like, this was our favorite time of the year. I mean, games are great, and they'll always be great, and they'll always have a special place. But I could go out and do those drills all day. Now, of course, I was never in a major league camp and having to do them for 9 hours at a time, you know, or whatever. But it is important, and it is something that – Now, were you able to be at a camp under Jerry Manuel?
No. I mean, I went to spring training before. I went the past year, and I've been years before, another year before, but that was, like, with my dad and siblings. So that wasn't really, like, watching. Yeah, that wasn't quite the same experience.
Because I was going to ask you if there were, you know, really discernible differences between the way Terry Collins, especially with the fundamentals and stuff, and the way Jerry Manuel seems to run a day.
No, I have no idea. I honestly, my assumption would be that they all just do the same kind of, because it's baseball, you know? Like, you can stress different things, but ultimately it's all, like, you have guys work on fielding, you have guys work on hitting, and you have to pitchers throw, and that's really
right.
All of them.
Well, I mean, one of the things that Terry Collins said – I'm sorry, Cal, I'll get to you in a sec. I just want to say one of the things that Terry Collins said or has said about something that they didn't do under Jerry Manuel, which is take a lot of infield. And he made it sound as if that's not something very common, you know, to take as much infield as the Mets are taking. Let's face it, they need it, you know, considering where they have guys and – Ruben Tejada being nicked up, and like they need to take infield, they really do. But he talked about it as if like taking infield had become like a given, and like some teams don't do it as often as they are doing it or whatever. So I was just wondering if you saw more of that, like more of a stress on fundamentals.
I mean, I was there for a couple of days, not that long, but in the small time I was there, it seemed like they were doing more fielding drills this year than they were last year, whereas, like, they do their stretching and throwing at, like, you know, like 9:30, 9:45 in the morning, and then at 10 o'clock, whereas last year it would be batting practice for, like, 2 hours with all different people in all different fields or working on, like, stolen base and stuff like that. This year there's a lot of fielding, just, like, a lot of fielding drills. And I don't know if that's just a reflection on how bad they think the fielding is going to be this year, but they did a lot of it. They did a lot of practice.
Yeah, I was going to say, does it look like it's working?
I think we'll see when the season starts. I don't know.
It's hard to tell.
Yeah, ask again in June, yeah.
I had a question, and I don't know how much of this you saw or if it even happens in camp. Did you get a sense of the veterans on the team, the guys that have been around a little bit longer, working with the younger players, or was that more of a role that the coaches were taking with the, you know, the younger players, the kids that are in their first major league camp? I've always been curious as to what kind of role the veteran players played in their development.
I think it depends on the player. I saw Johan Santana and Miguel Batista sort of do some, you know, like extra pitching coaching when they're not doing anything else. They're just working with random guys, like, you know, working on different things. You see some of that for a lot of position players. I think part of it with the veteran guys would be like Jason Bay and David Wright and Santana. That it's just kind of, in terms of actual leadership, is probably more of just by example. Like, they do their job, they get it done, like, they show up and they're on time, that kind of stuff, with the idea being that these are the good guys who are doing it, so all the kids have to do it too because they haven't earned it the way, like, Wright and Bay have.
I that's interesting because I get the feeling, couple things. I don't want to go into a ton about the Madoff stuff, and you know, we've talked about with that stuff with you in the past, Patrick. And I really don't, you know, we all know what happened. We all know what the courtroom decision. Let's talk about this team right now. We're fans. I know your press pass hasn't spoiled you. You know, you're still a fan. We obviously, I've listened to all your guys' previews of the other NLS East teams and stuff. We remain fans, so we remain optimistic. But one of the things that I found extraordinarily interesting was Sandy Alderson on with Mike Francesa here in New York the other day, talking about, you know, in Francesa in his inimitable way asked him, is the bloodletting over? Is that, I mean, do you think you're at the end of it? And Sandy said, yeah. He said, I really do. I really think that, you know, basically to paraphrase, but he said, you know, we're not cutting another $50 million of payroll. I mean, this is it. We did what we had to do. You know, now we can either add to it if need be, or. But do you think that's true? You were down there. These look like a good group of guys. I mean, they look like a group of guys that genuinely like each other, and they may not be the most talented team that ever lived, but they do look like there's good quote-unquote chemistry there. And I think I can see that the bloodletting might be over. Do you think that's true? Do you think that it's, as Sandy Alderson said, on an ascension?
I think they're, I want to say they're at a low plateau. I don't think it's going to go any further down. Like, I don't think it's getting any worse, but it might take this year before it starts to get better. Whereas this year is about, like, they have all the young players and sort of seeing who's going to wash out and who's somebody you can build around. And I think that's what this year is about more than anything. And just sort of seeing, like, is Jason Bay going to wash out, or can you hang on to Jason Bay for this year and next year and count on him to be reliable? And the same thing for David Wright. And for the younger guys, like, is Ruben Tejada going to be good enough to be a starting shortstop for, you know, however many years in the future, or is he somebody that they're going to have to replace eventually when it's time to compete again? All those kinds of questions that I think what this year is about. So not necessarily getting better right away, but not getting worse either.
Now, the big story down there this spring appears to be, and you know, from our perspective, is Johan Santana coming back from injury. Now, you were down there, and from everything that you read, it seems like a real positive thing for this team. Did you get that sense down there that the team was kind of energized a little bit about Santana's comeback and the fact that he's made it through the first 3 or 4 weeks of the spring without any incident?
He is a really, he's like a superstar, and maybe not talent-wise anymore. We'll see how the arm holds up. But in terms of, like, personality, and, like, he acts like he's the best player on the team. And I think he really does think that he's still, you know, Johan Santana and stuff like that. And I think that brings something that the Mets haven't really had in terms of personality that I've seen. I mean, they've had other good players, obviously, recently, like Jose Reyes and Carlos Beltran are gone now, and David Wright, but none of them were apparently have quite the same, like, charisma, I want to say, as Johan Santana. I think that's what he brings. At least he's very interesting to watch, do just about anything.
Is he similar to Pedro Martinez in that respect?
You know, that's probably a good comparison. I don't think he's quite as eccentric, maybe, as Pedro Martinez. I don't know if he's going to be.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if he's going to be, like, running around the clubhouse naked like Pedro Martinez is famous for doing. But no, yeah, some of that same kind of, like, superstar pitcher thing going on. Yeah.
And, you know what, frankly, this team needs that. This team has been beaten down as an organization, as a franchise and stuff. They need him. Even you hit the nail on the head, Patrick, not even from a pitching aspect, but just from a presence aspect. You know, you could even see it in the way they were talked about after he's had a few outings where he hasn't, you know, he's pitched well.
Yeah, and he'd just be, I think, something even if the Mets are just horrific this year. If he's healthy and he makes a start every 5 days, that's, like, one really interesting game to watch every 5 days. He's something to look forward to.
Yeah,
now, the rest of the team's trouble.
Exactly. Now, along those lines, let's talk very specifically about going into this year. Hey, we're excited. It's baseball, right? Let's not, you know, Cal and I are going to be there on opening day. You know, let's get it on. But there's always the Arizona Diamondbacks from last year to point to. So, which means everybody has hope. But specifically, Sandy Alderson talked a little bit about a six-man rotation, Patrick. And I just think that this, at some point this season, and my sort of want for it is predicated on either, you know, Matt Harvey or Familia doing really well and meriting a call-up. But I think if you can limit the exposure of Santana, if you can limit the exposure of even you know, John Neese and Dylan G in their development, at some point, wouldn't it be great if they could go to sort of like a six-man rotation for like a month or two, even just to bring up one of those guys, get them some starts, have Johan go every 6 day, maybe only make 22, 24 starts instead of 30? Am I crazy? Is that, I mean, they're not going to be good, right?
It's an interesting idea. I don't think it would happen if only because the odds of all five pitchers still being healthy in, you know, like August and Harvey or Familia forcing their way up, I think it's kind of like you need seven things to go right or six things to go right to get a six-man rotation, and that never happens.
Damn it.
I know. Well, it could be. If you look at it like, and then Chris Young gets healthy and is, you know, going to start pitching, then maybe you just need to hit like 6 out of 8. With
one of the young guys
forcing their way in, yeah.
Right, that's what Alderson alluded to. I mean, his allusion was to Chris Young being a member of that equation. But I would love to see it with the young guys, and I would love to see it like May 15th. I mean, again, that's like me. Like, well, they don't need to use – they can give Johan an extra day for like his first 6 starts. Isn't that correct, because of the off days?
Yeah, they have off days, yeah.
So they can build in an extra day for, like, his first 6 starts, which is great.
Right. So he's starting off slow and then just see how he goes. Yeah.
So
and you never know with this stuff. Like, last spring, everyone was talking about how to keep Carlos Beltran healthy through the whole year. And then, like, they kind of rested him every couple days for, like, the first 2 weeks, and then he just played every game the rest of the way.
Yeah, and then he just played 100 straight games. Right. So it was fine. A couple things very specifically about the team. I know you guys on Mostly Mets on the podcast, which is available on iTunes, by the way, went through the NL East and stuff like that. Cal and I have been doing that in bits and pieces, dribs and drabs, and then Tim Tebow became a Jet, and it all went to pot. But to go, I do have a bone to pick with you guys, and it's
okay.
It's bothering me a little. It's not bothering me. I think it's an interesting conversation. You guys went around. I know Ted picked – I think he picked the Braves, right, to win the East?
Yeah, he picked the Braves.
But he wasn't quite sure why, which I loved.
Yeah.
He's like, I don't know. They asked me. And you know, the wonderful thing about that is Ted could probably think of a million reasons why, but anyway, you guys went around the horn with that lineup.
Yeah.
And I as I was listening to it, I was like, I can't wait to get Patrick on the show tonight because I got to ask him, go around the horn with the Mets. How are they exponentially better?
Oh, in terms of lineup between the Braves and the
yeah,
Mets?
Yeah, yeah. I mean...
Oh, yeah, no, the Mets might have the best lineup in the division, but that's not where their problem is.
No, I understand that. I understand that the Braves' pitching is markedly better. I get all that. I definitely do. It's just that every team in that division, like I went around the horn with, you know, Freeman and Davis, you know, that could be a wash. And Uglen and Murphy, you know, they're both butchers in the field and are going to cost their team 15 runs from a defensive standpoint, maybe a week. But, you know, Murphy will probably hit 320 and Ugle will hit 35 home runs and 210. You know, you go to shortstop, and I actually like Tejada over whoever they're going to run out there. You know,
yep.
Wright is probably going to be better than Chipper Jones on one leg. You go to the outfield, I mean, Bay and Eric Hinsky? I mean, come on.
Yeah, okay.
You know, center field is sort of a wash. And then right field, obviously, they have Hayward, but I think Duda is... Lucas Duda has a chance to be a player, and of course McCann over Josh Torley is a big step. But Josh Torley's not as bad as everybody makes him out.
Yeah, he's not as bad as everyone seems to think he is. Yeah.
He's really not. He's just a serviceable major league catcher. Everybody wants him to be Mike Piazza, and it's not going to happen. And you guys said that on your cast, and I'm saying it here. It's true. Enough with the Josh Torley. All right. And I was a catcher, and I personally think pass ball should count as errors, but that's just me. I always have. But. You know, enough. He's got to catch a knuckleballer every 5 days. I caught three of those guys in college. It stinks. So, anyway. But you go around the horn, their lineup can be solid. It absolutely can be.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of scoring runs.
Yeah.
Right, the problem is that they've got, like, four or five guys who maybe are really first basemen. not, like, oh, just scattered all over the field.
There's that. How did
How
did that happen?
That happens. I think that just happens when you have a farm system like the Mets had a couple years ago, where just like everybody is a first baseman. Anyone that's hitting is a first baseman. So you're like, well, let's just try to see if they can play other positions. So you like Josh Tolley becomes a catcher, and then Daniel Murphy goes outfielder to like, you know, first base, converted first baseman, and then turns into a second baseman at some point. And Lucas Duda is like a first baseman, left fielder, and they're like, they don't have room for him, so they just stick with right field. And that's kind of how it happens. And then you got Ike Davis, who actually is a first baseman and plays first base.
They also had Nick Evans, who could play everywhere. He was a first baseman.
No, Nick Evans is gone.
No, they had him, though. He was
they
part
had
of that.
Nick Evans, right, they had Evans was another one who was just kind
of
like...
Another one of that
anywhere
group.
Else they could play him. Yeah, that group. They had just an enormous number of guys. And like Mike Karp, who's now, you know, playing for the Mariners, also another guy
one.
That was just like in the first baseman. Yeah.
All right. And they somehow started Mike Jacobs on an opening day.
Exactly, yeah, when they had all these different guys who could play first base.
Only Mike 2 years ago, too.
Only 2 years ago.
That's right.
Yeah. So, Patrick, everybody went nuts with Jordani Valdespin, who, by the way, may eventually develop in one of the better names to say.
Yeah.
And to hear Howie Rose say.
Yeah.
And you can't put a price on that. Do you think you got to see him firsthand down there in Florida? And we obviously we read Toby's blog, and we've known about this kid for a while. Whatever, bad rep, ton of talent. He obviously shows up in the locker room in a motorcycle jacket. I don't know what's his problem.
Well, here's the thing: you hear like when you have young players coming up through systems, almost for every player, everyone says what a nice young man he is, because that's just like the assumption you make about like kind of like shy major league, you know, like minor league guys as they come up, if they're deferential and things like that. You just say they're nice people. Like everyone says like when everyone comes up, they just talk about what a nice player are, and then they slowly reveal themselves, like the jerks slowly reveal themselves. but if you have a guy coming up in the minor leagues and everyone's like, this is a bad guy, just think about, like, what a bad guy he might actually be. Like, Bryce Harper, for example. Like, everyone's just like, this guy is, like, kind of a jerk already.
Right.
And as opposed to the way, maybe Steven Strasburg is also a jerk, but nobody said it when he was coming up because it was just like, oh, he's so nice, what a nice guy, whatever. Because that's just our default assumption about, you know, very talented baseball players.
Right.
So I think that's the thing to think about Salvestin. And also that he doesn't really walk either. So he's got holes in his game.
He's allergic to walking. Yeah, he really is. Those numbers, what did he have, like 3 walks and like 500? I mean, he had really ridiculous numbers.
He got to like AAA and walked 4 times and like struck out like 25-something times in like, you know, in like 50 games or something. It was
right.
And,
like, you,
and
can,
he,
you can walk
and
by
like,
accident 10 times. Right.
Right, and he makes he's not really a shortstop because he makes too many errors at shortstop. I don't think you could play him at shortstop in the major leagues.
No. Can he play center field, though, Patrick, do you think?
I mean, that's something we've talked about before in the podcast, the idea that, like, you can kind of take infielders, like Willie Harris, for example, and Scott Hairston, and kind of make them, like, scratch center fielders, like, decent.
He's extraordinarily fast. He's extraordinarily fast, is he not?
Right, and you know, your infielders still have to get under and catch pop-ups sometimes. So, like, you know, at least you can sort of do that. You know how to catch balls that are in the air.
Well, one of the things about the outfield, especially center field, is that speed is a great equalizer because it can make up for a mistake. If you can cover a ton of ground, you don't have to be the best tracker of fly balls because you can make mistakes and make up for them.
And I think that's their thought process behind maybe trying him in center field just to see. Like, at least, you know, increase his value, make him more versatile.
How do you feel about their – you're also, you know, with along with Toby, obviously, but you're obviously a big minor league guy. I think they came out at 20th, 26th for the minor league system. Was it not improved or something? I remember reading that.
Oh, we know those rankings. I don't put that much weight to those rankings because I'm not sure.
I don't either.
Yeah, like, well, if you go back, I'm sure if you go back 4 or 5 years, the teams ahead, very good farm systems 4 or 5 years ago, maybe some of them are doing really well. I bet some of them are still just middle of the pack because, you know, ultimately it's about the major league talent. And there are other ways to get that besides the farm system.
Right. I mean, the Royals are a prime example of having a wonderful system, you know, for 5 years and still having not won anything.
Yes.
But I think their system has improved. That one point I wanted to bring up was I think the Mets are in a very unique position. Now, let's take the Madoff crap out of the equation and the fact that if they were somehow in contention, you know, around trade deadline, and I think they could make a move. And Sandy Alderson said it the other day. We could make a move. We could add salary if we need to. I don't think I could have said that a month ago, he said, or even 2 weeks ago. But taking that out of the equation, you guys have touched on this a little bit, and I wanted to actually talk to Bri about it because Bri and I haven't had a chance to talk about it. The Mets are in a very unique position. I was saying this to a Yankee fan friend of mine the other day. They are clearly rebuilding. There are zero expectations this year. That's a very rare thing in New York. I mean, it really is. Even in the Mets' worst days, since they've had 100-and-whatever-million-dollar payrolls and stuff, there's always expectations. I mean, there are zero expectations for this year. They can actually play kids and find out what they have. It's actually a good position to be in. They don't have to rush their pitchers. They don't have to rush Harvey. They don't have to rush Wheeler. They don't have to rush Familia. You know, Henry Mejia can take his time coming back. They don't have to rush guys. And they can find out about the kids that they have here. And it stinks for us because we want to be competitive every year because we feel like we should be. But they're actually in a sort of unique position with guys running the show who, to me, know what they're doing. Baseball guys, not the owners. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, I mean, there's no expectations for them to be good this year, so I think everyone is thinking they finish last, and they're probably going to finish last, but they might not, and then that would make for a very exciting team. And even if that doesn't happen, you know, the year has not been wasted. It's not like it's not like the front office thinks this is a first place team that's going to finish in last. They probably think this is the last place team. And if it goes right, that's great. Good for us. Otherwise, you know, they're still following their plan.
Right, exactly. I mean, it, like 2009 was a disaster. You know, it was a disaster because the expectations were so very high and the team was so very bad. If this team loses 92 games or whatever, you know, okay, but we can find out about Lucas Duda. Maybe at some point during the year you find out about a guy like Rhys Havens. You find out if Daniel Murphy can play second base. You find out if Ike Davis can play a full season and put up, you know, decent numbers. You find out if David Wright is all the way back. You know, there's so many things. You find out if John Neese can make 30 starts. There's so many positives that can be gleaned out of this year for the future to me.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's it. They're just, like, it's not all going to work out. Not every player is going to work out, but some of them will. And then going into next year, they'll have a better idea of like, when it's time to build a winner. Which might be only a year or two away at that point. Like what positions you need to fill and what you need to develop, what you need to trade for, and what you already have. And that's what this year I think is really about.
So speaking of this year, Patrick, and this is the last thing that I have for you. Give me one or two things. Give us one or two things that you're excited about or you're curious about. You know, something that you're kind of, you know, couple of themes to the season or players that you want to see developed as you know, opening day is next week, everything's going to start up. Give us a couple of things that you personally are kind of excited for the season.
I am excited to see, I think definitely the hitters. I'm excited to see Lucas Duda. I want to see Lucas Duda, Ike Davis, and Ruben Tejada can do this year. So I think we have a feel for what Murphy can do and what Josh Tolley can do. As everyday players, and they'll be fine everyday players, I think. But I think, like, how good of a hitter can Duda be? Is he going to be as good as he was last year? Is he going to be a little bit worse? Or is he going to be even better? Because it seems that he's been getting better for, you know, the past three seasons in the minor leagues and in the major leagues. He just keeps on improving. Same thing for Tejada and the same thing for Davis. And I think, you know, how far can those three guys develop? And how far? And I think that's how far, how well those three do. We'll have a big determination on how the Mets do this year. I think that's what I'm looking for the most, those three, Davis, Tejada, and Duda.
I would totally agree with that. I think those three guys, and if, you know what, I love Davis and Duda already. Like, they had me at hello, because I'm a sucker for that. You know what I mean? Guy that's super...
That's Kingman.
It's Kingman, exactly. I mean, Duda may be Kingman who can hit 270 or 280. But, and, of course, it all comes back to Kong for me. But I'm extremely interested, not excited, but interested in Tejada. And I read your, you know, I've read your stuff on him and stuff like that. He just, I don't know what to make of this kid. Maybe it's because he looks like he's 12. That's got to be a part of it.
He does look like he's 12. He's bigger this year. His face still looks like he's 12, but at least he looks like a... Like, you know,
is he shaving?
20-year-old person now.
Right.
I honestly don't know if he's shaving. I don't know. But if I had to guess, I would just know. But
he is intriguing to me. He absolutely, I think, shows flashes of being a very, very capable, if not above capable, shortstop in the field. He showed more hitting wise. You know, than I thought he was ever going to already. And he's 20 or 21.
Yeah, he's 21. He'll be 22 this year. But the thing to think about with shortstops is, like, Ronnie Cedeno, who's on the Mets now, Ronnie Cedeno started for the Pirates for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I know the Pirates are bad, and Ronnie Cedeno is, like, just can't hit at all. Like, 290 on base percentage. It's really bad.
Right.
But Ronnie Cedeno, like, as an average fielding shortstop, you know, and sometimes good fielding shortstop, and, like, just terrible on base percentages, was good enough to start for 2 years. And he wasn't really that bad, like, in terms of, like, you know, what they could have replaced him with. He was fine. He's, like, an adequate shortstop. And Ruben Tejada is not going to have a 290 on base percentage this year. He's going to be even better than Ronnie Cedeno,
right,
who's already a capable starter.
Right.
I think the question is just, you know, how much can you get out of his bat to determine if he ever does become. And I really do think that I wouldn't be surprised if he makes an all-star team. At some point.
Really?
But 3 or 4 years in the future? Yeah.
And there's the spoil factor, I mean, we're spoiled. You know, it's like, it's why Josh Tolley will never be judged fairly. You know, we're spoiled as Met fans at the position. You get spoiled for a while.
Yeah.
You know, we just had Jose Reyes for 9 years. I mean, you get spoiled. You had Mike Piazza for all those years, so you expected the next catcher, especially if he's homegrown, you expect him to be – I mean, I know Mike Piazza wasn't, but I'm saying you expect him to be Mike Piazza.
Well, yeah, I mean, they had Piazza and Todd Hundley before that, and then
right.
like a little bit of a gap, and then Garrett Carter before that. And, like, you go back, and they've always had good catchers, but now we're kind of in a lull between, like, Mike Piazza and replacing Mike Piazza, and they really haven't replaced him.
Well, but the fact of the matter is you can't. I mean, you're talking about a once in a generation catcher. Nobody's going to hit 350 home runs and catch anymore.
That's
not going to happen.
Special. Yeah.
Yep. Exactly.
And
I mean,
to tie it back in with this year, I think that's what the Mets are trying to see this year. Which players do they have? Which of these young guys are going to be not Mike Piazza special, but good enough to kind of like be your starter for 6-7 years?
That's right. Yeah. Who's gonna be able to? You know, there's got to be guys to build around, and there's also got to be guys that are just good. Solid players. They don't have to be all-stars. They don't have to, you know, again, Rafael Santana was never going to make an all-star team. Okay, but they don't win 108 games without him at shortstop. You know, you have to have certain guys like that. You know, I've never seen Danny Heap's name on an all-star ballot. You know,
yeah,
but you have to have guys that can just play.
Well, you need a couple guys. You got to see which guys are going to be stars and which ones are going to be like big contributors. And then, like, the 1980s Mets, you know, then you trade for Keith Hernandez and Gary Carter, and you add stuff to what you already have.
Right. Look at the 2000 – exactly. And there is a – I hope. I think there's a Carter-type trade for this team to make next offseason. I think there's
a Hernandez-type trade.
Or a Hernandez-type trade, right. It would be Hernandez at this point. You're right. But – look at the Phillies from the thousands, you know. I mean, they have stars, and then they have guys like, you know, I mean, the catcher, you know, who has a stupid year and is not that good, you know, or, you know, has a very, very solid year or plays above his potential. And you have to have that. You have your stars, you have your Utleys and your Howards and your Rollins, and then you have Placido Polanco hit 390 somehow, magically, you know, like
– right.
You have to have that sort of thing. Speaking of the Phillies, by the way, and then I do want to ask you about Michael Cera, because I'm working on a theory that you may actually be him.
I might be Michael Cera, or I might be a member of the Phillies.
Both. No,
Michael Cera is a member of the Phillies.
Michael Cera is a member of the Phillies. Worst baseball movie ever. no, but speaking of the Phillies, you guys did, I thought, an excellent job, and what – I just – please relay this to Ted. Ted, on this last Mostly Mets Cal, just sort of lost it a little bit. He sort of lost his cool a little bit just about how this needs to be the year the Phillies break down. Like, it's supposed to happen. This is supposed to be their 09.
Oh, it's looking like that already.
Their 09 Met year. And you guys – Patrick, it was funny. You and Toby sort of gave him a hard time. Because, well, the pitching is still there, and they're still so good, and Ted just wasn't having it. And I thought that was, it was like a great – Ted was like, no, I'm sorry. It has to happen. I've had enough. That's it. Good day, sir. They're having a terrible year, I've decided. I think they could. I want you to tell Ted I'm on board.
All right, I'll pass it on.
I really do. They are just one injury to one of those pitchers away, and I'm not rooting for injury.
No. But
like they did with Johan Santana, which they did. That's okay. Philly fans, you know who you are. Many Philly fans rooted for Johan Santana to get hurt. It's okay.
But you don't root for injury, but you understand that they do happen, that pitchers get hurt.
They do happen, and they've not happened to Roy Halladay or Cliff Lee or Cole Hamill. And they really are one injury to one of those guys away, I think, from – they're not going to lose 90 games. But man, that lineup is suspect.
It is right now, yeah. But at the same time, the thing I point to say, they won like 100-something games last year. So they've got a long way to fall. They'd have to be like 15 games worse to miss the playoffs.
Not a finger. Before we let you go, Patrick, I did want to ask you, though, if you I don't know if you listened to WTF with Mark Maron. It's a very good podcast. But he had Michael Cera on this past week, and Michael Cera talked a lot about the Arrested Development movie.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you saw that.
No, I missed that, but that sounds like something I would like to check out.
Check it out. What's interesting is he had Michael Cera on his Monday episode, and he had Jeffrey Tambor on today's episode, because he comes out with episodes on Mondays and Thursdays.
Okay.
So it was like his Arrested Development week. But Cera said it's going to happen. He said, we just don't have a script. And he's like, I'll sort of believe it when we're all in the same room. But he told a great story about Tambor the first time he met Michael Cera's mother.
Mm-hmm.
You can totally picture Jeffrey Tambor doing this, and it was like a table read, like they had just started and stuff like that. They were getting ready for the pilot, and Cera was there with his mother because he was only 14.
Yeah,
and so he's, you know, Tambor's walking by and he says, "Oh, Jeffrey, I'd like you to meet my mother." And he says, like, real sotto voce to him, "I don't want to meet your boot mother," and like walked away. Like him and his mother are ready to leave, and he's like, literally like 4 seconds later, he came back and gave my mother a kiss and stuff. It was like so perfect, and that's just who he is. I love Jeffrey Tambor. I really do.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to hopefully it actually does happen, the return of Arrested Development and the movie.
Yeah, well,
Have you guys heard about the grassroots movement to get Steve Holt back in the movie?
I have heard about that. Yeah.
I did not hear about that.
Steve Holt?
Yeah,
because they haven't contacted the actor who plays Steve Holt to come back yet, and he's been kind of
what
pushing
the one thing that this script is missing? Steve Holt!
Oh, that would be wonderful. That would be really, really good. Oh, they have to get him. I love the idea that, and Sarah even said this, that, you know, they're doing 9 episodes on Netflix. So it's going to stream on Netflix, actually. So they didn't even have to bother going to a network.
Yep.
And then 9 episodes, and he talked about Mitchell Hurwitz. But the great thing is Sarah didn't get his work visa until like the day of, like they were shooting the pilot, and he was talking about the pilot scene on the pier, and he and his mom were watching it from the hotel room, like the Santa Monica Pier, not Santa Monica, they were south of that in LA, but he said he and his mom were in the hotel room like just watching, and they'd brought another kid in and everything because he couldn't get his work visa. I like cleared it up that afternoon. He was like, I was sadly watching them shoot from like from the hotel room. Oh, so good. I like that Michael Cera, Cal.
I know you do.
I'm a big fan. Wait, how do you feel about Anchorman 2, Patrick?
Oh, I feel like it's been such a long time since the first one. I don't know. I don't know if they can pull it off. I've heard good things. I heard their original idea was to, did you hear this, that they want to do a musical, like a Broadway musical, Anchorman 2, like run it for a couple weeks and then film the movie?
Oh, tremendous. Oh, so please make that happen. Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
Oh, please make that happen. They were supposed to do Old School too as well, right?
I've heard about that too, but I don't know if that'll ever happen either.
Don't touch that. Don't touch. You may look, but don't touch. One of our buddies had a patient named Frank Ricard. Is that correct?
Yeah.
He had a patient named Frank Ricard. He's like, how am I going to do this with a straight face? Maybe put on the Cisco CD. I don't know. See what happens. My favorite line there, Cal, has always been, this is your husband, Frank Ricard. Patrick, anything to plug? You going to be at the Ha Ha Hole or anything like that? Or?
No, I have nothing to plug. I don't know. Listen to Most of the Podcast. Go to patrickfoodblog.com. You know, whatever.
How guys? Seriously, you guys are like 37, 38 episodes into the podcast and stuff, and I'm being completely serious. It's really come along. You guys have really gotten really good at it. It's a great listen every week, and I'm not even blowing smoke or anything. It's been really good. Are you starting to? Last time we talked to you guys, I think we're like 15 or so episodes in.
Yeah.
Something. You were a little skeptical still. Are you starting to dig it a lot more?
I think no. We have a lot of fun. I'd like to say like we've gotten better because we've been working harder. But it's really just like you talk to two people for long enough, and you start to develop some kind of like who talks where and what we're going to talk about and all that kind of stuff. So any improvements in the show are completely accidental.
Well, at least you're honest.
Yeah. I mean,
no,
it's a podcast. It's easy to do.
Exactly, and honestly, the rapport is really good, and it's a really good listen. I dig it every week. I check it out, and so keep it up, and definitely come on during the season, please.
Absolutely, yeah.
All right, say hi to the boys for us.
All right, I will. Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Patrick.
Well, thanks, Patrick.
So that was Mr. Flood talking about the Mets. He's just so good. He's such a
You know what's refreshing about him is he's a level-headed Mets fan, and there aren't many of those out there.
Yep, he is. That's true.
You can tell, you know he is a dyed-in-the-wool, huge, you know, big Mets fan, but he's not emotional about it.
Yep.
And I have to think that he's probably a lot happier for that.
I totally agree, and you know what? He has just the right amount. They're a good mix on that podcast because he has just the right amount of sort of dry. He's like the Bob Newhart.
Yes,
completely dry. Sort of. Let's reference comedians that are 80 years old, but he's definitely the Newhart there.
Who's the Pat Cooper of the bunch?
I'd like to be the Pat Cooper of this bunch, if I may.
You're the Lenny Bruce of this group. You know that.
Wow.
Especially when you start throwing the Yiddish around.
I've been known.
Hey, funny story. Fred Willard was at the Lenny Bruce Carnegie Hall show.
No way.
Yeah, he was at the Lenny.
Oh, now I have to go listen to that tonight.
But he was hilarious. Page, he said you couldn't hear a thing. He was in the balcony, and that's you and I have listened to that. You have that, right? The Lenny Bruce at Carnegie Hall.
Yeah, it's famous for its hecklers.
The show
barely gets 10 minutes in when people on the balcony start screaming.
Right, that's exactly.
He
would
hear it.
Fred Willard was one of them, and he's like, you couldn't hear the whole show.
Oh.
He's like, I've listened to it later, like on the CDs. He's like, I had no idea what he said that night. Could you imagine? Cal, do you know who Lenny Bruce is?
Very odd that would happen at Carnegie Hall, of all places.
Well, it was a midnight show.
That shouldn't change the acoustics of the room, it being midnight.
They use different microphones.
You know what? It's midnight. There's no bass now. All the bass went to bed.
Cal, just real quick on Patrick, and then I have a very important question to ask PJ. That we'll all chime in on. It's called the fun load. But lastly, on Patrick and the Mets, I totally agree that very, very level-headed fan. We're going to the opener next Thursday, you and I, and then we're going to do the show that night and everything. And I'm – just to close, I'm excited about this season for one reason, and I know everybody's just killing the Mets. And look, they're not gonna be in the playoffs. They're not gonna be, you know, everybody says they're not gonna be a good team, blah, blah, blah. But for that reason that I said, Bri, they can really find out a lot. They have a season to actually find out a lot where there's no expectations, and that never happens.
Yeah.
The last time that happened was 1983 or 84, and they found out some great things that helped them win a championship. So I feel like they can do that this year. Like everybody expects them to suck anyway.
Right.
And they have good – just listen to Alderson the other day, Bri. Gosh, he so gets it. He really does. I think he's loving this now. Now that the trial is gone, I think he's loving this.
Well, this is what he signed up for.
Yeah.
And he gets it when nobody else gets it, which I think he digs even more because he's kind of at that level.
Yep.
And he has no problem. And this is my perception of him. I want to be very careful to not make any definitive statements about I know what Sandy Alderson thinks or feels.
No, because we can't possibly.
It's too often, I think, people use that as a crutch. So my perception of Sandy Alderson is that he's on another level, and he sees all of the hue and cry down below, and, oh, the Mets are going to stink, and what are you excited about? And he's got a big grin on his face, and he's thinking, hey, you know what? You people all think that way. I'm going to go about my business. I'm going to do the job I was brought in to do, and let's just see how this plays out. I think we might surprise you.
Yep.
And I think that that's what's going to happen. It's a very different type of season than we're used to with this team.
Yes.
And a lot of fans don't know how to wrap their head around that because they're so conditioned to, especially in New York, we have to contend. We have to do everything we can to win now. And they're not trying to win now. I mean, they're trying to win now, but they're not built to win now. They're built to win in the future. And the seeds are being planted. And you guys nailed it perfectly. Let's see what Luke Astuda is. You know, let's see what Ruben Tejada is, or Josh Toley, or Ike Davis. Let's see what these guys are. Let's see what Dylan G or John Neese are going to be. Because let me tell you something. In 4 or 5 years, if this team is contending, and it's contending with Lucas Duda in right field and with Ike Davis at first base, that's going to be a fun team, and we'll have grown with it. You know, we'll have been there now, watched it develop, and, you know, at the risk of being a cockeyed optimist here.
Billy Mumfrey?
Yes, I'm pretty the cockeyed optimist. I really like where we're at right now, and it's intriguing to me.
Right,
that's what I'm looking forward to.
I hate that we got here, but I don't mind that we're here.
I wouldn't have signed up for this.
No,
but now that we're here,
shouldn't have happened. Shouldn't have happened.
It should not happen
in this town. It happened because the owners are clueless and terrible, and we can do a whole podcast on it. Okay,
arrogantly defiant.
Correct. But it happened, and here we are. And you know what? It could prove to be a big thing. I mean, it could prove to be the best thing. And you know what? I'm not even thinking about 3 or 4 years from now. I'm thinking about 1 or 2 years from now. I really am, because that pitching is going to come quickly. Those kids are going to come quickly. Harvey, Familia, Wheeler, they're going to come in the next 2 years. So you need to find out if Ike Davis is going to be a guy, or Lucas Duda is going to be a piece there, or Daniel Murphy is going to be a piece there, or even David Wright going forward is going to be a piece there. You know, and because I'm telling you, there's no need for this to be a five-year plan. There's none.
It won't be.
Especially if financial limitations and restrictions are taken off, Bri. I mean, I've had this argument myriad of times with people, with Met fans, and that is the Wilpons never had a problem spending money. That doesn't make them good owners. Doesn't make them good owners. High payroll does not make you a good owner. It's all the other crap that makes them not good owners.
Well, and the problem is that they gave $140 million to Omar Minaya to spend.
Well,
we didn't know how to spend it. It's like, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. But you can't kill them for giving him the money.
You can't kill them. You can kill Minaya for spending it the way that they did. And you can kill the Wilpons for the way they run their organization.
But, Cal, I mean, are you going to get on Omar Minaya for giving Pedro Martinez that contract? Or Carlos Beltran?
No.
How about going to get Carlos Delgado? I mean, he put together a good team.
He did, but you got to get on him for the Oliver Perez contract. You got to get on him for the Luis Castillo contract. You got to get on him for the Jason Bay contract.
You get on him from 08 on.
08, 09, and 10.
Yeah, you get on him from 08 on. Actually, you get on him for after 07, after 06, not improving the starting rotation.
Well, and the other thing you get on him for, because... I know.
Because there's no reason that John Main and Oliver Perez are pitching games 6 and 7 for you of the NLCS after you've won 97 games, and you don't bring in a starter.
Although they did pitch well. That wasn't their problem.
Well, I'm just saying.
I think the other thing you get on him for is his lightning in a bottle approach, where he would just bring in all of these retreads and hope that one of, you know, it's like, because Jose Valentin worked out, that was the worst possible thing that could have happened to them.
Right.
You know, and then they got Fernando Tatis to work out for a year and forget about it. This whole team was going to be built with, you know, the stars of the early 90s.
Right.
And he didn't do much more to improve the team.
You can't kill the owners there. They gave the guy they believed in the money. They were wrong to believe in Minaya.
That's where you kill him. They should have recognized that a change was due sooner.
Yes. But again, spending money on the payroll does not make you a good owner. Especially when that money is earning 18% with a guy who's getting you false profit.
And the other thing to remember is that, yeah, I know. Now that the Madoff thing is behind them, that doesn't automatically mean, and Met fans should not expect, Sandy Alderson to be given $140 million.
No.
It's not going to happen.
You know, the thing is, Brian, it doesn't need to.
He doesn't need it. That's the great thing about him. He doesn't need that money.
You know, should they be up to 120 in 2 years? Yeah, they should. Yeah, they should. I'm sorry, they should. They should be at 110, 120. But only if there are players out there
that make sense to
help.
I'd like to see what Sandy Alderson and his crew can do with that kind of money.
With $120 million, yeah. Be wacky. All right, so...
Wacky?
It would be wacky. it'd be like the Jets. It'd be like the Jets.
Ricciardi with the arrow through his head, and, you know.
Right, right. Deep Podesta with the fish in his pocket, in his suit pocket. Everybody knows the Jets are the standard bearer for a clown now and for circus.
Right, they're you know, three rings.
In fact, I think Tannenbaum is now the new word for clown.
No, Rex.
Right. You going to have a Rex at your party for your kids?
Yeah. Just put a big red nose on him.
He's got Rex shoes on. I mean,
stop messing around, you two.
Can't believe you guys keep Tannenbauming around here. Squeeb, 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 squeeb. There's the big Sean Ferguson on a unicycle juggling football. Peege, you know what I wanted to ask you and what I wanted us to close on was this.
Michael Cera impression?
Do you have a Michael Cera?
I did. I brought one. You should have told me.
You know what we always say comes first, buddy? Breakfast, Dad? Family.
Family.
Right, family.
Taron Killam on Saturday Night Live does an incredible Michael Cera.
Yeah, oh, I've seen that.
Really?
Incredible.
Yeah, real good.
Wait, you're telling me somebody's doing a Michael Cera on Saturday Night Live right now?
And Steve, and nails it.
Excellent.
Really?
Google it.
What's the sketch?
Yeah, he brought it out on the Zooey Deschanel How to Be Quirky sketch.
It was Zooey Deschanel show.
Right.
And it was Zooey Deschanel as Mary-Kate Olsen.
Right.
It was Abby Elliott as Zooey Deschanel.
Right.
Michael Cera. And then Kristen Wiig had to ruin it with her Bjork impression.
Right. Kristen Wiig crapped on the sketch.
Right. She brought a sledgehammer to the sketch.
No.
She stinks.
What's wrong with Kristen Wiig?
She's a little heavy-handed.
She's a lot heavy-handed with the comedy. Too much.
Walks in with big lead shoes.
did you see MacGruber? Have you seen the MacGruber movie?
I didn't see the movie, no.
The MacGruber movie? Did you really just utter those words?
You haven't seen MacGruber?
Do you know how valuable my time is right now? I have a 15-month-old. I cannot spend an hour and 25 minutes watching MacGruber.
Has he seen MacGruber?
Listen to me and learn.
There are fantasy drafts to prepare for. I don't have time to watch MacGruber.
MacGruber is very, very funny and disgusting in a way that I did not expect it to be disgusting. It's very rare that I am watching a comedy and will suddenly throw my arms up over my face and go, oh no! But MacGruber does that. And Kristen Wiig is in it, and she actually has a light touch.
That's
in MacGruber.
She usually Tannenbaums her way through scenes.
Wow.
I mean, she went to Tannenbaum school. I'm not.
She's just a Rex.
She really Rexes around. I will not be watching MacGruber. I can't. Which
I can't. I don't understand this. You love to partake of the silly comedy.
But you had the children. You understand. I don't get an hour and a half free, and if I do, it has to be spent on something more valuable than MacGruber. Like my fantasy baseball team.
Or this show.
Or this radio podcast program.
You can find the time.
From a grouper?
You can find the show. Stop taking your 2-hour beauty showers and
I'd rather watch Dodgeball again, I'll be honest with you.
That's another beautiful movie, but it's not disgusting. MacGruber is special because it's disgusting.
Touche. Peege, we have our fantasy baseball draft Saturday night.
Yep.
And as we've been counting down the 12 days of Draftmas.
Right.
As we're getting up to this, I know you don't. I want to ask you: do you understand why this is a holiday?
No.
Okay.
You and my wife.
Good show, everybody.
I just don't understand it. It's really, that's part of the foreign language.
Do you? Okay, so let's break this down. Let's take this apart here in the Ready to Unload Fun Load.
Right.
Do you not understand the fantasy sports aspect of it, or do you not understand how the draft for football and baseball are the two greatest nights of the year?
I understand the fantasy sports and or league. I do not understand the value of draft night or draft day or the draft party.
That's important for you to understand. That will shed a lot of light on why we refer to it as draftness.
I'm very open-minded. Is it disgusting?
It can get that way.
I might be into it if it got a little bit gross.
Put 12 or 13 guys in a room together with no women anywhere. I mean anywhere.
All I'm thinking about is the smell of feet.
Yeah. Cal, can you explain? Maybe we should take him with us.
It's hard. Well, that might be the only way. It's very difficult to explain because the explanation of it would send him in the opposite, or send anyone in the opposite direction of understanding it. Like, wait a minute. That was your pitch to sell me on this? 13 guys in a room with books and computers and spreadsheets talking about players and fake numbers? What?
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, so
it's the best
so
night
far,
of the year.
I'm keeping a safe distance.
Oh my god, and bad puns.
Oh, terrible. Same jokes every year.
Same jokes for 10 years.
And yet it's glorious.
Never gets old.
Well, put it another way, Cal, though. Here's a better way to maybe frame it. In a room with some guys you don't like, but no, like probably 8 of your closest friends, 4 guys, you can give or take. But
really, you're bringing in guys you wouldn't otherwise share a room with.
Put it this way, we're bringing in guys that we see once a year.
That's right. You gotta
spin
out a league, right? They're not bad guys or anything like that.
Not bad guys at all.
They're just not part of your crew. But you got members of your crew, your best friends, sitting around drinking beers, eating barbecue, talking baseball for 4 hours. How could that be bad?
And the most important thing is it's an escape from the responsibilities
that as you,
Brian, I'm going to stop you right there. I just hit Brian's mute button. I just hit the cough button. You're about to give away the farm.
Did he almost give away too much?
No, it's already been.
Did he almost be like, and the one guy who's in the Illuminati is.
At the end of The Sixth Sense,
right.
Bruce Willis is dead.
The password to become a Freemason is. PJ, are you there? PJ.
It's a lot like the Freemasons. It's a lot like the Freemasons, but only with baseball and stolen bases.
And
Fight Club. And Fight Club. That's right. It's a little like
Fight Club. Is there any punching? If there's punching, I might like to see it.
There's no violence.
There's a very strong discussion.
And lot of self-loathing.
A lot of self-loathing, yes.
Where does the money come in? Where does the money play a part?
There's an Elliott Smith album worth of self-loathing.
Wow.
It just plays in the background.
Yeah, it's just... if you can play... what do you call it? A distorted reality is now a necessity to be free, just over and over on a loop.
Wow. Is there like one dark, quiet guy who's there and everybody has to watch him to make sure he doesn't hurt himself?
Well, I mean, you've met Dan. I mean, you know.
The best analogy I could give you, PJ, is if, you know, you eat something and the second you swallow it, you wish you hadn't eaten it and you just feel awful about it.
That's Dan?
No, that's the self-loathing.
And that's the self-loathing.
Why did I do? I should never have done that. And then
that's what happens when I pay $37 for Jose Reyes. to have Jose Reyes on my team. That's this, or I somehow get ballyhooed into bidding way too high on a Met just to prove a point.
Always.
It's a terrible. Somehow Lucas Duda will go for $24 because I just can't see a Met going for. I just can't. I don't want to see him embarrassed.
And someone will sit there with their arms crossed and an evil grin on their face.
Is there a financial cap so that you don't lose your
shirt? There is. We have a very involved league. This is our seventh season. And,
no.
Yes.
More than seven.
No, it's our seventh season.
What
Evan?
What,
Evan's won 3, Rich has won 2, and Keith has won 1. It's our 7th season.
Really?
Yep. Wow. And it's a keeper league, PJ. We have guys for it's a salary cap auction. I mean, it's involved. Put it to you this way.
You keep all of these details straight.
That's correct. Put it to you this way. That hour and 20 minutes of MacGruber, I need that time. To be competitive. Like to do research and be competitive.
Wow.
I did research last night. Teresa was
laughing. I couldn't get you to remember to bring your own guitar tuner.
Oh, come on.
To a single rehearsal.
You know why I didn't bring my guitar tuner to rehearsal.
Self-loathing.
That's correct. And also so you'd tune my guitar. I'm a lead singer. I need care. I'm a fragile egoist.
You're a delicate snowflake.
There's nothing.
That is what we called you when you left the room. As soon as the door was closed, we're like, the delicate snowflake has left the building.
First of all, there's nothing delicate about me at 287 pounds.
Wow.
Well,
my goal weight. Shut up.
Before we close, I want to harken back to Dan Aykroyd as Obi-Wan Kenobi. I don't feel we fully explored that. So I think it's Dan Aykroyd in Ghostbusters in Star Wars as Obi-Wan Kenobi. So basically it's Ray Stantz. I mean,
Ray Stantz just walks onto the set in uniform.
Ray Stantz
with
as
the proton
Obi-Wan
pack.
Kenobi. Sand people are easily startled. But they'll soon be back. And in greater numbers. You've never worked in the private sector. They expect results. What happened to Dan Aykroyd? Anyone?
He pops up from time to time in different things.
Yeah. He got comfy with his sort of bookstore conspiracy theory existence.
Go back, which he plays in Ghostbusters 2.
Right.
I urge you both to go back and watch Ghostbusters and then watch Trading Places. He is Trading Places has been on HBO like every other day, and that's a movie I didn't watch a lot in the 80s and 90s. I didn't. I maybe saw it like maybe four times.
I saw it four times a week.
Right. I think I've watched it like four times in the last 2 weeks. He is very good in that movie. Very good.
He's totally solid. Dan Aykroyd's downfall came when he started to desire more of the clown-type roles versus the terrific straight-man roles, which is what he was better at.
Right. You know where he breaks your heart? He breaks your heart in Gross Point Blank. Breaks your heart.
He's just terrific.
I think he's terrible.
No, I think he's just terrific in Gross Point Blank.
He's trying way too hard in that movie, Peach. Way too hard. Again, he has the Kristen Wiig shoes on. Go hit the ball easy, son. You don't have to kill it.
Just touch it.
Just touch it. He's way too hard in that movie with the popcorn and the... No, it's too much. Too much. That could have been a great Ghostbuster if they gave him great Ghostbuster job and said, go do it and be successful with it. I don't like him in that movie. That hurts me in that movie.
Agree to disagree.
A whale's vagina.
He was lucky.
All right. So to close, Dan Aykroyd, where have you gone? He'll be playing Tim Tebow in the movie.
Hey, listen. I don't know if you caught the movie news today. But Universal Pictures announced that they're going to do, I guess because of, you know, public outcry for it, they're going to do a sequel to Twins. The
Get
Arnold
out of
Schwarzenegger,
here.
Danny DeVito movie.
I want you to stop making stuff up.
Can you guess what it's going to be called?
Oh, boy.
This is the absolute truth. This is not a bit.
Quadruplets.
It's going
right?
to be called triplets. It's going to be called
triplets.
Yes.
Triplets. That's not real, is it?
It's not. It's real. It is.
You can't print that. That's not real,
is
it?
No, it's true. It's Pravda. Listen. So who are they going to get to play the triplet? Come on. What equals Hollywood hilarity?
Zach Galifianakis.
He's still a little too edgy. You know, this is Universal Studios.
Universal Studios. So it's DeVito, Schwarzenegger, and
Adam Sandler.
That's a good pick.
Tremendous.
Everyone's favorite bomb machine, Eddie Murphy.
Oh, of course.
It's
no.
funny because he black.
Is this real?
He's the third. I see.
See, because it makes so little sense that way, and people will say, oh, you can't do that, but it's funny.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
It's all happening. Wow.
Right.
I will say there's a moment in Twins that I will take with me forever. Scott and I, my brother and I, still sing it to each other.
Tonight
is your night, bro. Tonight is your night, bro.
That's a great song.
You're going to do it. You're going to cut it, bro. It's your night, bro. Tonight is your night, bro. Tonight is your night, bro. You're going to do it.
Is there a top three Danny DeVito performances, or are they all the same?
You know, I was thinking of Smoochie the other night, and Smoochie is a tremendously underrated movie, in my opinion.
I think it's great.
Death to Smoochie. Should get better. First of all, Ed Norton's great, I think.
Yeah, that's just, that movie has, it's in that category of should have never been in a theater movie.
Yeah, no. Should have just played in my living room. Like, that's
should've
it.
Just play, right, just straight to HBO and everybody
that's
would
right.
have liked it.
I should have stumbled upon it at, like, you know, 11:30 one night after about five beers and a glass of wine and been like, what is this Ed Norton movie? I've never even, yeah. Oh, my God, this is magnificent.
Alcohol does help.
It does. But I love that performance by DeVito. And then I got to go to Johnny Dangerously as the DA.
That's a good one.
Oh, John, you shouldn't have.
I just saw him last night in Man on the Moon, the Andy Kaufman flick.
Yeah.
He's very good.
Yeah.
He's very good, but there's something so distracting about knowing that you're going to see the cast of Taxi.
And then him.
And DeVito's on screen playing a different character.
I totally agree.
That's true.
That was just a bad decision.
Yep. Bad idea, jeans. No, without a
bad
doubt.
Bad idea, jeans.
almost as bad as Going Ape.
Hey, you watch yourself.
Wow, that is a great movie.
Really?
No. No, I don't like that.
The best part about him as the DA in Johnny Dangerously is the newspaper headline when he gets killed. It says, DA killed in a commercial. Because it was for the malt liquor. He holds up, and the picture that they have on the paper is him in Taxi. it's Louis De Palma. The picture on the paper is like a total press shot from Taxi of him as Louis De Palma, and it says DA killed in a commercial.
I absolutely love Taxi. But I think I equally love him on It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, I think.
Yeah, see, I don't watch it, I know. Terrible job.
It's all right. It's going to be there for you. They're not going to get rid of that one.
Right. Cal, you watch
I
that?
I think they're still making them.
I don't. It's in my queue. I think Evan has been imploring me to watch that one.
It's funny. It's just straight out funny. I don't watch it a lot, you know. But every time I see it, I just say, oh, man.
Oh, boy.
He's funny. He's special here. This is a good role for him.
Yeah, the few that I've seen have been funny. I can't commit. Peach, I can't even make time to watch MacGruber. I mean, come on.
It's an out, buddy. It's disgusting.
That's no moon.
It's
a space station.
If that doesn't bring you in, I don't know what will.
That's no moon. PJ, final unload for episode 3.12.
The Arkansas Supreme Court struck down the ban on sex between teachers and students.
Back our bags, honey.
So they're accepting applications. It's probably not illegal anymore for a teacher to have sex with a 18-year-old student, even if it is your student.
All right.
Get it on.
Way to go.
Good. So
good
we're
job.
Growing. We're growing.
I feel
learning
like I'm growing.
And we're growing, and we're sharing. I just want
I
to be
like
part of it.
Cal, final unload.
I want to wish you a merry draftmas. I want to wish everybody a happy beginning of the baseball season. This is always my favorite time of the year. Baseball starting, basketball and hockey going to the playoffs. And may he be toasted on both sides.
Good callback.
And for my final unload, I'd like to just say, hey, everybody with the Tebow stuff, let's just all take a breath. Huh? Let's take a breath. Let's all take a step back. Let's all remember we're sentient beings here on God's earth, or whoever's earth you believe in. Let's just leave God out of the equation. In fact, let's just leave all of it out of the equation. Let's just take a step back and remember. And remember, football's great. We'll see you next week for Ready to Unload with Cal and Sam P. Thanks, everybody.
The man is a Shakespeare.
Good night.